Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, where Anders Lew Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting.
Welcome back to the Hashtag Finance Master show, the podcast where we explore what it takes to build world-class finance functions. Today, I'm joined by Vishakha Taneja, a finance professional and thought leader who's passionate about raising the profile of FP&A, financial planning and analysis. Vishakha built her career across accounting and finance, and now she's using her platform, very well, I should say, to spotlight why FP&A is such an exciting and essential part of the modern finance function. In this episode, we'll discuss why FP&A roles are in high demand and how they differ from traditional accounting roles, and what this shift means for both finance professionals and CFOs looking to transform their teams. We'll also explore a little bit about how AI and modern tools are transforming the way that FP&A operates. And of course, we'll look at what the future holds for those who wish to make the transition into this space. So Vishakha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the kind introduction, Anders. I'm especially glad to be here because it's not just any podcast. It's a conversation with another FP&A enthusiast like you. I really value that you see FP&A the same way I do, as a true business partner that bridges the gap between finance and business and drives impact both at the table and in the decisions. I can't wait to get started.
Fantastic. So, Vishakha, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your journey in finance and how you developed your passion for FP&A.
So this is quite a closer question, Anders. For many people, finance is mainly about reporting and compliance, looking backward. But for me, it started very differently, around a family dinner table. While most families would talk about how their day went, our conversations often revolved around business and technology. My grandfather, who was a businessman, would share challenges like suppliers raising prices and how to protect the margins without losing customers. For me, that felt like a game, solving puzzle to give the business profitable. At the same table, my father, he was a tech engineer. He would talk about how mobile phones would soon become common. At that time, he was the core person developing the mobile devices and the networks around them.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, landline is also a luxury right now, and you're talking about mobile phones? So from him, I learned the importance of staying aligned with technology as it evolves, because technology has the true power to transform entire industry. So while many others see finance as backward-looking, I would always see it as forward-shaping. To me, a report was never just about what happened. It was about what's coming next, how will the strategy adapt, and how the business stays competitive. That's why FP&A came so naturally to me. It combines the business instinct I picked up from my grandfather and the tech awareness I learned from my father.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an amazing story, I think. And it takes me a little bit back to the last episode that we recorded with Rachel Daly, where we also talked about why people go into finance in the first place, where I said, because I ran some polls back in the days, where 55% said because they like to work with numbers, which is no surprise to anyone, but 35% said they like to work with business. And you must be one of those people, right, that
Absolutely.
You like to work with business and you're probably good with numbers, but it's not the numbers that drive you, it's the impact you can have in the business. And I think if you have that, then you kind of must be in FP&A or some more business-facing finance roles for sure. So I love that story for sure.
Thank you.
So you've highlighted that FP&A professionals often earn more and have a greater impact than traditional accountants. So why is it that FP&A is becoming so attractive right now?
So you're right. FP&A professionals today are becoming the more sought after. And there's a reason they often earn more and have a greater impact. So earlier, oil was the most valuable commodity driving economies. But today, that commodity is data. FP&A is like the refinery. We take raw data, turn it into insights and strategies and impact. The same way refinery turns crude oil into fuel that powers industries. Now, add AI to that mix. Just like computers went from being rare to absolutely indispensable, AI is on the same path to becoming the new common. So for me, data and AI are like the powerful engines, but FP&A is the pilot in the cockpit, charting the course, ensuring business reaches its destination safely and profitably. And that's why FP&A is becoming so attractive right now. It sits right at the intersection of world's most important resource data and the most transformative force, AI. And no matter how technology evolves, companies will always need FP&A to translate these forces into decisions that drive real outcomes.
No, absolutely. And I would maybe even take it a step further and say, because one thing is to look at how the business is performing and distilling the data into insights, but you can do that at operational and tactical, but also strategic level. And for me, FP&A should be, and they don't always do that, but they should be operating at a strategic level, right? Because they are the business partner to top management and, of course, the CFO, and sometimes even the board, right? Because they shape all this information, but too often they kind of miss the opportunity to shape that conversation because they get into standard formats and they don't comment anything. They don't really share insights on, is it a good strategy we're having? Is it working? So for me, it was really trying to define what should that mission be for FP&A, which and we kind of said to drive the right strategic choices in the company. So I really want FP&A to elevate even further, but it goes to the point I think you're making is that it's more attractive and probably also gets a higher compensation package because the impact, or potential impact you can have is just bigger.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what do you see as the key differences between, you talked a little bit about it, but between accounting and FP&A, not just in task, but also like just talk about what's the value that they bring to the business?
Okay, so this is a question most argued about, and in a lot of my posts, I see accountants defending themselves. It's a good opportunity to clear that over here. So accounting and FP&A are often compared as past versus future. But I think it's important to highlight that both are equally valuable and interdependent. So accounting provides accuracy, structure, and data. It's like Darwin's theory of evolution. On its own, the theory is a powerful asset, a foundation of knowledge. But just like scientists use this evolution theory to develop medicines and vaccines that protect lives, FP&A takes the structured data from accounting and applies it to shape strategy, drive decisions. And without FP&A, the information from accounting risks staying static, like a theory that's never applied. So for me, accounting safeguards the foundation while FP&A builds on it to create impact. And it's together that they turn this financial information into real outcomes for the business.
Yeah, it's not a versus, right, or either or. It's really a big and that needs to do this together. And I think I really just see it as like a connected value chain where, you know, if it should be very simple terms, accounting produces the numbers and FP&A, they use them for something, right? So it's exactly what you're saying here. Just in a more, let's say, colorful language with how you apply it. So I think we see that the same, but you can probably also recognize, and that's also what you're saying, you see on your LinkedIn post, is that accountants perhaps feel a bit stigmatized in the way they're described in today's landscape. Do you think that's, how do you think we can kind of elevate the value that accountants also bring to the table, because they shouldn't feel the need to defend themselves, but on the other hand, of course, we should also be realistic about what value they provide and what value FP&A, for instance, provides. So how do you see that battle, if you will?
So if I was put in a situation where an accountant has to be given this importance or he needs to feel that importance, I would say, look, data, which I always say is the most important resource and it has replaced oil in today's world, that is sitting with you, and the accuracy of that data is with you. The foundation is with you. we are using, we FP&A teams are using that foundation to build on top of it. But without the foundation, what is the, can you build the building? No. So the foundation is still with them. So we are, so the crude oil is with accounting, and we are the refinery, which is then turning it into fuel to power those industries. So I think the power still lies in both the hands.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you mentioned AI before, right? That if the data foundation is not in place, then AI can do a lot of wrong things really, really fast. I posted, I think it was even last year, about the criticality of now finally fixing our data issues in finance, because AI is just useless almost without it. It kind of feels like it hasn't really been hammered home enough at that point. So maybe that should be the reason for being for accountants today, to really solve that challenge, so we don't keep being stuck in these discussions that we have been for the last few decades, I would say. So I think that was a good way to term it. But nonetheless, I mean, I think a lot of accountants, they want to move from accounting into FP&A. Yeah. So what are the biggest challenges in making that transition, from your perspective, Vishaka?
So I would sum it up like this. The transition from accounting to FP&A is less about technical gaps, but it is more about the mindset change. If you have curiosity and willingness to think forward, the skills can always be developed. So the main challenges and how can we overcome them? For example, one of the main challenges, mindset shift. So accounting is looking backward, whereas FP&A is looking forward, which requires an individual to be very comfortable with the ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about scenarios, what ifs, if you're already doing this, then how do I reach the another scenario without knowing the future? So when you start thinking like this, you're almost building the right muscle. The next thing is business acumen. So accountants often miss this business acumen. However, when you have to transition to FP&A, you need to think, or you need to understand the drivers like revenues, margins, operations. And that can be developed by shadowing business teams, asking questions, and connecting the numbers to real-world decisions. The third most important thing, and I really focus on this a lot, is storytelling with numbers. I mean, you have done all your data, you have created the reports, but how do we convey them in a story manner? And accountants, often I see they're using financial jargons. So I would sum it up. Instead of, you know, preparing reports for compliances, FP&A is about influencing decision. This is a skill one can practice and start turning reports into insights. Like, what does this report mean for tomorrow? And to give you a very simple example again, let's talk about a P&L. From an accountant's tongue, you will hear revenue was 10 million, costs were 7 million, so profit is 3 million. So the focus is on accuracy, reconciliation, ensuring the numbers tie out. However, if you look at the FP&A view, they are, instead of using these finance jargons, they would tell it like a story. Sales grew, but more customers left than expected. So growth might slow if we don't fix the churn. Delivery costs jumped because of higher fuel prices. So unless we optimize logistics, profits would shrink. Right now, we are at 3 million profit, but without action, it could drop to 2.5 million. So there is a whole lot of difference in the two approaches. And this is something that I would really say one should focus on if one wants to make the transition.
Yeah, I think those are some great focus points. And we published a book earlier this year to help communicate that story. I would say some FP&A professionals probably need that as well. But I think you just explained elegantly, you know, what, in a simple term, what are the differences that you need to look at? So you touched on the skills, but you also mentioned the mindset. And I just want to stay a little bit on that, because changing your mindset is hard. So, you know, what's your advice for accountants to, you don't just wake up one day and say, hey, yesterday I was an accounting mindset, now I have an FP&A mindset. So how does that work? And have you gone through it yourself somehow, or was it always there? You know, can you share some tips on how can they actually shift that mindset?
So to answer this question, if somebody is curious, it's very easy to get into FP&A mindset. For me, it all came with curiosity. Because I have this curiosity, or anybody who has that curiosity of knowing the why behind anything, I think if you apply the same on the data, you can turn from an accountant to a FP&A. So once you have that curiosity, you automatically will start developing the business acumen, because now you'll start asking questions to the business team. Then second, storytelling with data. It is so how one develops, or how one develops that skill, is once you're curious and you have gone through those whys, then what's coming from a report also, you will start explaining with those whys only, because you have that mindset now coming from curiosity as a driver. And third thing, which is something not only FP&A, not only accountants, I think everybody should start looking into, is adaptability and tech mindset. With AI, analytics, and automation reshaping finance, you don't need to be a data scientist, but at least you must be open to leveraging those tools that are available. So I think that can even help to answer those questions that come out of the foundation of curiosity.
That makes a lot of sense. So essentially, instead of simply producing the numbers and not having an opinion about them, you should be curious about, why do we have 3 million in profit, or why did the sales go up with 10%? So just ask those questions. And in the beginning, and I've had those experiences as well, coming into new roles where you don't know so much about the area that you started in, and you ask very basic questions, and it's okay. You know, no one thinks you're stupid, because they understand that you need to gain that basic understanding before you can build on. So as long as you build on the knowledge that you gain, then everyone's fine as answering those questions. But if you're not curious, if you don't ask those questions, then you're stuck producing the numbers, which of course we still need people that are good at, but then you will not transition into a FP&A if that's what you want. So I think that was a very simple way of saying, what is it actually need to do? And then apply consistently over time, and it will come, and then you will suddenly be in FP&A. So thanks for sharing that. So you mentioned a little bit about it just now. You know, you have written about Excel, automation, AI, these things. But how are these tools really reshaping the day-to-day reality of FP&A teams today? Can you give some examples of what you kind of see out there?
Sure. So, you know, in my mind, I have created this whole universe around Marvel and comparing them with Excel, automation, and AI. So I always call Excel as a Spider-Man. So like Spider-Man's web, Excel can do almost everything if you're creative. It's flexible, scrappy, problem solves in endless ways, but it still relies heavily on the user skill and manual effort. Whereas automation is like Doctor Strange. So they create portals and shortcuts, bending time and space to make things faster and more efficient. They remove the repetitive work so you can focus on strategy and impact. And AI, I call it the Iron Man suit. Transformative, giving you superhuman scale and speed. It augments FP&A professionals, letting them see scenarios, patterns, and forecasts instantly. But just like the suit needs Tony Stark, AI needs FP&A judgment, context, and direction.
I think that was a great way to explain it, that even probably you know, our kids could also understand, right? So maybe you found a way to groom the next generation of FP&A professionals by doing like that. So I would love to see some content from you on that on LinkedIn, and see how the audience will take that on board. So, you know, where do you think that AI will have the most immediate and practical impact on FP&A versus what we might see in 3 or 5 years? Because of course AI has been around for a long time, but the generative AI has only been around for coming up in 3 years now, right? So it's still kind of early days.
So see, we can put it this way that right now AI in FP&A especially is on an autopilot mode. So it is capable of handling repetitive but necessary work, like pulling data from multiple resources, preparing reports, even running quick what-if scenarios. This frees FP&A professional to spend more time on analysis and advising business. But over the next few years, AI will evolve from autopilot to a real co-pilot. So it won't just process information. It will start recommending actions like which product line is becoming less profitable, which cost levers to adjust if demand shifts. And I was reading about this Ikigai tool from MIT, how it is capable of forecasting demands and patterns for up to 50 years. So the important thing is AI won't replace FP&A professionals, just like the co-pilot doesn't replace the captain. But AI will augment us. The FP&A professional is still the one who understands the business context, weighs trade-offs, and communicates the story in a way decision makers can act on. So AI brings the speed and scale, but FP&A will bring the judgment, context, and influence.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think I term it this way at a recent roundtable for CFOs, senior finance leaders, saying we need to move from doing the work to qualifying the work, right? So we need to be qualifying the output we get from AI. And of course, today, you could still have a lot of errors coming out. That's simple qualification. But even if everything that comes out is correct, you still need to qualify whether you're actually able to do that in your company. And I think the capabilities that you talked about, I went to SAP Sapphire in Madrid earlier this year, which is the big conference of the year. And I saw what you described on display. So essentially, they had this, as they usually do these tech companies, right? They had a showcase where you could go in and see how a company would run in the future where AI was playing its role. And you basically started with like a management meeting where you could just say, okay, this is what happened overnight or the last week. You know, it was around terrorists, right? Which was hot back then. And then you could basically say, okay, well, so if this is the landscape right now, what should we do about these issues you impressed? And then it came up and it had multiple different things you could do, and you could combine different options to give the most optimal outcome. And it was just, you know, so whatever we have imagined that it could do for us, it can do. But of course, in this case, it provides that your data is correct and you have everything on a platform that can actually use it. So many companies are still some years away from having that. But it's like I say, it's not thinking about the art of the possible anymore. It's really thinking about how do we make this happen for our own company, because the technology is there. Then it's just about making sure we can apply it. In terms of industries, you know, things always move faster in some industries than others, but are you seeing any industries that are adopting modern FP&A practices faster than others? And what can we learn from some of those front runners if you have some insights there?
So, Anders, what I've observed is that the industries that are adopting modern FP&A fastest are the ones moving at the highest speeds. So, for example, in tech and SaaS, it's like driving a Formula One car. Customer behavior changes by the second. The FP&A has to make rolling forecasts and scenario calls almost in real time just to stay on track. Now, when you move to e-commerce and retail industry, it's more like weather forecasting. Trends shift daily. A change in season, a viral campaign, or a discount can swing demand. FP&A here is about predicting the storm before it hits the ground. And now when you go to airlines and logistics, FP&A is like a traffic control. Every flight path, every truck route, every fuel fluctuation matters. So one needs to constantly monitor and provide quick course corrections to stay profitable. However, there are some slower industries like manufacturing or healthcare. The cycles are very slow. They are more like cruise ships. They don't need to change direction every second, but they can still learn from faster industries by building better navigation systems. So instead of looking at the rear view mirror only, they start using the windscreen also. The big point is the faster the environment, the faster FP&A has to evolve. And now the mindset is spreading everywhere. So it's better that we adapt to it.
I love those insights. And maybe it also provides a little bit of a blueprint if someone wants to transition from accounting to FP&A. Perhaps you don't transition industries at the same time, moving from a maybe slow one to a fast one, because it would be very difficult to keep up. Maybe you even go from a fast one in accounting to a more slow one in FP&A, so that you don't have to keep up with too many things at the same time. Because like you say, you know, some industries definitely work faster with this than others. So that was really, really helpful. If we then try to just look ahead a bit further, how do you see the role of FP&A evolving in the next 5 to 10 years, if we can try to look that far in the future?
So today, many FP&A professionals see the CFO role as a natural next step in their career. And rightly so, because FP&A builds the skills CFOs need, strategic thinking, business partnership, and resource allocation. But looking 5 to 10 years ahead from here, I think that aspiration itself will change. With AI making compliance and reporting almost seamless, the CFO role won't be defined by traditional finance tasks anymore. Instead, it will evolve into what I call COFO, Chief Operating Finance Officer, someone who blends finance and strategy into one role. So for FP&A professionals, the exciting part is the gap between finance and strategy will almost blur. The future top finance leader won't just be the custodian of numbers, but the architects of strategy, which means FP&A isn't just a stepping stone to the CFO's chair. It's actually the foundation for what that chair will look like in future.
That's a very aspirational way to look at it, but I completely agree that the lines between finance and strategy should blend. And I told earlier about the vision or mission we've set for FP&A, but I've also done a lot of writing on the strategic CFO in recent years. And I just keep hammering it every day, because I want the CFO to take charge of this even better, have FP&A take charge of this, and the CFO simply be a participant in shaping strategy. So it's exactly like you're saying, right? If FP&A gets it right and develop the right direction, they will not just be order takers from the executive team and say, this is what we've decided, please model the strategy. No, they will shape everything for the executive team and shape the strategy. So I think it's a really powerful time to be in FP&A with all the tools being enhanced, AI coming in, because it frees that critical thinking time we need to actually move to that next level. That has, I don't know if it's always been the idea we should get there, but it certainly is now. And if I was a CFO, that's what I would demand of my FP&A team. And if I was a CEO or board members, I would demand the same thing of my FP&A team. So really a great opportunity to step up, and also an exciting time to be in FP&A. And I fully get why so many in accounting wants to move into FP&A as well.
Absolutely.
So just a final question here, one that we always ask on the show, Vishaka. So on Hashtag Finance Master, we define a finance master as someone who helps build a world-class finance function. So Vishaka, how does your work and passion for FP&A contribute to that vision?
So to answer this, I would first like to define a world-class finance function.
Great.
For me, a world-class finance function is one where value delivery isn't limited to shareholders, but it extends to society and environment as a whole. It's not just about partnering with the business. It's about owning a larger impact that goes beyond the boardroom and into the world outside. Take Unilever, for example. Their finance function played a central role in embedding the Sustainability Living Plan. Finance leaders ensured that sustainability metrics were tracked alongside financial ones, making sure capital allocations supported environmental and social goals. The result was not just shareholder returns, but measurable progress in reducing plastic, sustainable sourcing and improving livelihood globally? Or Tesla, where finance decisions around bold capital allocation into R&D and gigafactories weren't just about companies' growth, but about accelerating the world's shift to sustainable transport. And the choices shaped an entire industry and influenced how society thinks about clean energy. So these industries have shown the relevant examples that, you know, how finance, how a world-class finance function can impact all of this. It is not just about balancing the books, it's about balancing the future. And that's why I'm so passionate about FP&A, because it's the part of finance that naturally plays in that space. I see it as my role to take ownership, create value with pride, and ensure decisions ripple outward, not just protecting the bottom line, but shaping the future. So for any finance master, finance is at its best when numbers don't just tell the story, they change it. And a finance master is the one who makes that change.
That makes a lot of sense. And you almost had like a tagline there, right? It's not about balancing the books, it's about balancing the future. Because, you know, shaping the future, you can shape it in many different directions, but the balance, I think, is critical. And another topic we've written a lot about is, because now, of course, ESG is a bit of a stepchild. I'm sure it will come back again. But clearly, finance needed to step into that and help not just qualify the choices we make, but also quantify them so that we can actually see those measurable results, which, so it's not just a grand CSR strategy like we call it maybe 10 years ago, but it's something that has a real impact. So thanks a lot for sharing that and expanding the definition of what it means to be a finance master. That's very nice. So Vishaka, you're big on LinkedIn. I feel at least you're growing a lot there, but if people want to reach out to you and get some advice from you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
So LinkedIn, yes, it's the first place. And the other way to get to me is my link on the LinkedIn for my email. And my contact number is also present on LinkedIn.
Great. So if you're sitting out there wanting to move from accounting to FP&A, I'm sure Vishaka has a lot of great advice for you. Or if you're sitting in an FP&A team or function where you feel like we're not operating the way she describes, maybe I need some advice from her in terms of how we can raise the level, she's the one to reach out to. So Vishaka, thanks a lot for coming here today, for educating us everything about FP&A and reshaping or redefining what it means to be a finance master. That's just taking things to the next level. We certainly appreciate that.
Thank you, Anders. I love your posts and I love the insights that I received from you. Definitely looking forward to another podcast like this. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And thanks a lot for the feedback as well. And to everyone out there, thanks a lot for listening in once again. You know where to find us as well. So hope to see you again next week or maybe in 2 weeks. We are sometimes shifting between the weeks, but hope to see you again soon. And yeah, you know where to reach out. So thanks a lot, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting.